You're listening to the Stress in the City podcast, a self-care resource for the busy and burned out. I'm your host, voiceover artist Brittany Nicole, and each episode, I'm breaking down adulting. Because what's more stressful than being an adult, right? I'll share the best books, methods, and tips to help us all figure out how to do this life thing better. Ready? Let's start the show. Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Stress in the City. I'm really excited to actually get into today's topic. It's something that I've wanted to kind of dig into for a little while now. And even though I am a huge proponent for therapy and having a good therapist, I truly believe that a good therapist is something that every human being needs at some point in their life. The reality is that not everybody is going to get a chance to do therapy, or not everybody is going to get a chance to work with a good therapist. And honestly, there are other reasons why therapy may not be in reach for someone. They may not have the time, the finances. It may be a challenge to find the right therapist or the right type of therapy. And straight up, like, maybe you're just not ready, or maybe it's just not for you. So in today's microdose, I wanted to kind of share some other options of how to improve your mental health if you don't have access to a therapist or if therapy isn't for you. I really wanted to focus today on things that are accessible for most people, regardless of what your resources are or whatever your resources are not. I wanted to be able to give some tools that most people will be able to use to feel better. So let's get into it. Okay, so for today's microdose, I have for you 4 ways that you can improve your mental health, even if you don't have a therapist. And these are going to sound kind of basic because we all kind of know these things, but I'm going to break them down so you understand beyond the basics why these are essential. And I really want to empower you with the knowledge that you can do something to change the way you feel. You can do something to make yourself feel better. And it doesn't matter what you have. It doesn't matter what you don't have. These things you can do. So let's start with 1. And this is an underrated, really big deal, but improving your sleep is like such a huge, oh my God, I could have my own TED talk on sleep and mental health. I feel like I should. You know what? That's what I'm going to do now. Let me tell you a story, okay? I have never had a good relationship with sleep. As a little girl, I stayed up late. I know every single Nick and Knight show there ever was because I would go to bed at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning regularly, never had good sleep. And I think I paid for this in my adult years in the form of an autoimmune condition and metabolic dysfunction. And this kind of culminated, I would say, in 2020 with everything else that was going on in 2020. But that was the time where I really started to reevaluate, okay, I have a terrible relationship with sleep. My brain is not working anymore, and I need to start at the basics. So at that time, the time of my nervous breakdown, I was working like 13-hour days. There would be days where I would get like 4 hours of sleep, and they were non-consecutive. And it almost was like my personality disappeared. Like my vision changed, my focus changed, my ability to cope with stress changed. Like I would be working and I would get an email and I had such little capacity to function that any amount of challenge or any amount of stress, I would just cry. And there were times where I was literally laying on the floor crying and my dog is like licking tears off of my face. And I'm like, I should be able to deal with this, but I'm just so tired that I can't. And there's this point of like lack of sleep where being awake becomes physically painful. So I'm saying this from a place of I have been there. And fixing your sleep is something that is not easy. It requires sacrifice and it is not a quick change, but you can do it. And being on the other side of it now and understanding how important sleep is, one, I'm extremely vigilant about my sleep, but two, having practiced good sleep hygiene for a long time, it gets easier. And you get to a point where you don't want to stay up late and watch, you know, scary movies and the things that are going to affect your sleep, because you realize you just feel better when you don't. So I preface all of that to say, you probably have heard these things. You probably know these things. You probably don't want to do these things, because I didn't either. But trust me, it's worth it. Okay? So that said, maybe you actually have not heard this as a concept for improving your sleep, but balancing your blood sugar is actually very important. And what that looks like is, so basically every time you eat or drink something, your blood sugar spikes to some degree and it goes back down. Then you eat and it spikes again and it comes back down. Well, ideally, you want there to not be high spikes and crashes in your blood sugar throughout the day, because that creates certain negative effects in your body. I won't go into all of them because that would be a 5-hour long podcast and nobody but me would be interested in that. But essentially, you want to keep your blood sugar as balanced as possible throughout the day. And that may look different for everybody, depending on how your body processes things. But for me, what that looks like is having breakfast in the morning and eating every couple of hours something. It may not be a full-on meal. It may just be like a couple of carrots or an avocado or whatever. But generally speaking, what works for most people is having meals that are balanced in fat, fiber, and protein, and making sure that your body is satiated throughout the day so that at night your blood sugar doesn't crash, which is a lot of the times if you're waking up in the middle of the night like I do, my hand is up. It's because your glucose levels have dropped to the point where now your body starts producing cortisol to keep you alive. And now you're awake. Hello. Yes, that happens to me. That happens to me often. And so what I do, one, I'll say that happens to me often, but it only happens if I've been skipping meals. If I have been regularly eating balanced meals throughout the day for a consecutive period of time, I don't wake up in the middle of the night. But in my busy seasons, when I end up skipping breakfast or I only eat one time a day, I wake up in the middle of the night. I notice that. But you do have to kind of notice what your own patterns are. The point is not to do exactly what I am doing, because I've cultivated my understanding of what works for my body over a course of trial and error and figuring things out. But I think a good general basis is getting balanced meals with fat, fiber, protein, making sure that you have enough nutrients for your body during the day so that your body doesn't kick in cortisol during the night, causing you to either wake up or have poorer quality of sleep. And another brief little story time. I had a brief history with panic attacks, and they would happen when I was falling asleep. I would wake up and immediately like go into a panic attack upon waking up. And it took me a couple of months to realize that I could actually stop the panic attack by eating something. Literally, like I was trying all the meditations and all the things that you do to try and keep like your nervous system calm when you're in a panic attack. And it's almost like this loop. Like you get in there, you have to try and keep yourself calm, otherwise you perpetuate the panic attack. And I was doing all the techniques. Come to find out, all I needed to do was eat some. All I needed to do was eat something. And literally, once I discovered that, I have not had a panic attack again. So that is to say that blood sugar and balancing your blood sugar is a very important part of your sleep. And it's something that you do in the day, but it's something that can show up at night if not managed properly. So as I'm talking about cortisol and hormones and all of that, we need to talk about melatonin and cortisol. What the heck are those? Why does that matter? Melatonin is responsible for many things in your body, but as it relates to this conversation, it's responsible for your sleep, for allowing you to fall asleep, for allowing you to stay asleep, and to have a good quality of sleep, you need a good quality of melatonin in your body. Cortisol is the opposite. It works in opposition of melatonin. Cortisol is your... people call it the stress hormone. And yes, cortisol is produced when you are stressed, but cortisol gets a bad rap because it is the go hormone, basically. It's what makes you do everything. So, but you don't want your go hormone going at night. You want your relax hormone going at night. So think of melatonin like the moon and cortisol like the sun. And I know that sounds woo-woo, just follow where I'm going with this. This is important. Our bodies have a clock which kind of times which hormones are going to be most important when. And that's very general because this actually gets extremely deep. The circadian rhythm is the 24-hour clock. And then women, we actually, our bodies have an infradian rhythm, which is the rhythm of our hormonal cycles. But that's not, don't get me talking about hormones because I will get on a tangent and I will stay there. Like I will stay there. But to the circadian rhythm and why that's relevant to sleep is because we do things in our modern lifestyle that throw this off. And one of those things is using devices, laptops, computers, iPhones, iPads, TVs at night. The reason that this throws off our circadian rhythm is because these devices give off a blue light. And the blue light, you probably have heard, you know, blue light blockers or people wearing blue light blocking glasses. The reason that this actually affects your sleep is because the blue light signals to the brain to not produce melatonin, which is the hormone that helps you sleep. So, for example, if at night you're working and you're on your laptop, you're literally telling your body you don't want to go to sleep. You're telling your body don't make sleep hormones. When you're up at night watching TV, trying to relax to go to sleep, you're telling your body don't make sleep hormones. And you may still fall asleep, you know, but you won't have as good of a quality of sleep as you would if your body actually got the proper message, which is it's time for bed. So let's talk about some ways that you can actually improve your natural melatonin production to improve the quality of your sleep or just get sleep, period. One of the things that I do is as soon as the sun goes down, I put on these glasses. They're by Swanwick and they're blue light blocking glasses, but they're not the clear ones. They actually have kind of an orange lens and they look funny. I'm not gonna lie to you. They, you know, they're not cute, but I put them on as soon as the sun goes down as a way of signaling to my body, like it's time to start shutting it down. It's time to start turning it off. And it's recommended to get away from or in front of devices 1 to 2 hours before bed. In addition to that, Something that you can do during the day is as soon as you wake up, you want to get sunlight in your eyes, not in a weird way, like you're staring at the sun, but you want to see the sun when you wake up. That stimulates your cortisol awakening response. And that's kind of a way of like training your hormones to get in the right cycle. It's a hormone balancing act. And it's free. It's free. Just look at the sun in the morning and turn off your devices 2 hours before you go to bed. That will improve your sleep. It will not be overnight. And there are probably other things that you need to be doing in tandem with this if you're struggling with sleep. But this is a big piece of the good sleep hygiene pie. So get sun in the morning. Make sure that you're seeing the sun first thing in the morning. Going outside is great, but if you can't, look out a window. And reducing your blue light consumption at night with blue light blockers or just not using your devices at night. Some things that I actually do are I also use red light. You can get red light bulbs or you can get smart light bulbs. There's a little bit of an investment with that if you want, or you can just keep your lights dim or off and use candlelight. When I read at night, I use an amber book light. So just trying to be vigilant about how much light I'm getting at night. So I'm making sure to communicate to my body that it's time to rest. And you know what? Also, like, it's a vibe. It's kind of a vibe to be like, okay, it's nighttime. Let's get some nice, dim, sensual lighting, some candle lighting. It puts you in a certain mood, and that has an effect on things. Just saying. Okay. My next tip for improving your mental health without the aid of a therapist is getting more movement in. And I thought about saying exercise, but I really want to emphasize that it's literally movement. Exercise is great and working out is great, and I highly recommend that too. But this doesn't have to be about exercising. It doesn't have to be about trying to improve how your body looks. It doesn't have to be about that. This literally is about occupying the body that you live in and moving it. And it can be as simple as walking. Like I feel like I've probably said it before. I have, I think. Because I'm very passionate about walking. But, you know, it's a great exercise form, but it's also a great coping mechanism, literally. And it's also great for helping you to process thoughts and feelings. Walking helps improve something called divergent thinking, which is literally thinking outside of the box. So it's the act of thinking and processing something, but also being in motion at the same time, that not only literally gives you a different perspective because you're walking, but it figuratively gives you a different perspective when analyzing problems and processing your feelings. I will link the resource that I got that piece of information from in the show notes if I can find it, but it's very interesting. And it's something that I do regularly. It's something, again, free. Okay? Free. Just walk. Other forms of movement help with moving energy and feelings out of your body as well. Dance is great for that. I know personally, you know, when I'm feeling what I call emotionally constipated, I like to listen to music that either matches my mood or matches the mood I want to feel. Like if I'm sad and I'm in a funk and I want to feel energetic and alive, then I will play music that feels the way I don't feel. Or if I'm sad and I can't figure out why I'm sad and I want to lean into that feeling, I'll listen to sad music and just move my body. Like I do love dancing, but you don't have to be a dancer. This is not about dancing, performing. This is not about choreography. You are a person, and emotions are a body language as much as it is a language. And so this is about kind of alchemizing your feelings and connecting with your feelings in a physical way and releasing that energy by moving your body in whatever way that feels authentic to you in that moment. If that means you got to go in your bathroom, you got to go in your room and lock your door and you don't want anyone to see it, then fine. Just allow your body to move in whatever way comes up for you in the moment. And that can be awkward. It can be sexy. It can be sad. It can be angry. Whatever you want to express, just let it happen. And see how you feel afterward and report back to me immediately. You're welcome. Okay, so my next tip for improving your mental health without a therapist, I don't know, maybe I'm projecting this onto you, but I feel like it needs some prefacing. So let me just say, I am guilty of not doing this enough. And I forget sometimes how truly healing just having fun can be. I'm very analytical, and so my solution to problem solving, healing, fixing things is analyzing the problem until it turns to dust. But sometimes you really do just need to change the channel in your mind and do something fun. And so this tip is to incorporate more play into your life. And this is how bad I am at playing that I literally had to read a book about how to play. And I didn't even finish it. So the book is by Stuart Brown. He's actually the founder of the National Institute of Play. And he wrote a book called Play, How It Shapes the Brain, Opens the Imagination, and Invigorates the Soul. And I was intrigued by this book because I noticed in my own life, I don't prioritize play enough. And I thought maybe if somebody convinced me of a scientific reason that play was good for me, that I would do it. And it helped, but I still struggle with it. So I want to share some of the insights that I did glean from this book because it did kind of illustrate in my mind how we take play for granted. We think it's something that's only for children. And one of the things that he says is the opposite of play isn't work, it's depression. So obviously this is something that is important for the human experience. So I want to share that. Now, how Stuart Brown defines play is essentially something that's done for its own sake. It's voluntary, it's pleasurable, it's not repetitive. It produces a sense of well-being. And when you don't get it, you pay consequences, whether those are social, emotional, physical, or cognitive. So this is tricky as an adult because sometimes, and I don't know if this is the same for men as it is for women, but I think sometimes as women, we confuse play with relief. Like, it feels good to check the laundry off of my to-do list, and that might give me a sense of well-being because I feel, now I have less to do. That is not play. Laundry, for me, is not pleasurable. There might be some people that laundry is pleasurable for, but I don't think he would really classify doing the laundry as play because of one of the pillars of play being you're doing it for its own sake. If you're doing laundry to be productive, you're not playing. If you're doing laundry because you like the way laundry detergent smells, then that's play. We're talking about doing something just for the pure sake of you enjoy it and incorporating more of those things into your life. Now, on the science side, because I felt like I needed proof. I needed receipts. So he also discusses the neurological effects of play, which I think is really interesting. Some of the things that play does for us on a neurological, from a neurological standpoint, meaning what happens inside our body when we play, is we have more dopamine increased in the in the anticipation of play, and dopamine is a neurochemical associated with the reward center in your brain. So it makes you feel good. Play also releases opioids and endocannabinoids, which all contributes to a sense of well-being. And there's a lot more talk about cannabinoids now because CBD is very powerful, but this kind of uses the same system that taking CBD would do to produce a sense of well-being and an improved mood. Play also allows us to build trust and bond and grow and develop closeness within relationships. So it's really an essential ingredient to having a good life and having a good human experience. We need it. We literally need play. The thing is, I think deep down we know how to play. Like, we grew up most likely playing something at some point, and at some point we just grow out of it. So I think as adults, we kind of struggle with giving ourselves permission to do these things or prioritizing it and figuring out what does play look like, you know, for you as an adult. That's your journey. Is this is going to really be based on your own nature, your own play history, your own background. Playing for you could be doing something creative, or maybe it would be doing something physical like sports or connecting with other people and getting around, you know, your friends and family and talking and playing games like that. That might be your play. You will have to discover that for yourself. I'm not here to tell you what that's going to look like. I just want to encourage you to give yourself permission to do it, because I think that that's something that a lot of us struggle with, is even recognizing the need, recognizing when we've gone a long time without play, and, you know, prioritizing it the same way we would taking a bath or eating food. Like, it really is that important. Without play, life is missing vitality and it's missing meaning. And you could have your life totally together, but if you don't feel connected to it, something will still feel off. So I want to encourage you to incorporate more play in your life. You have permission from me to do it. You have permission from Stuart Brown, the founder of the National Institute of Play. Like, there's an Institute of Play. People are out there actually paying money and doing research to figure out, like, why do we need to play? If somebody paid money to contribute to this research, it's got to be important. You know what I'm saying? So do it. Figure out something to do and do it. Now, my last tip for improving your mental health is something that I've talked about before. I definitely have talked about it in a previous podcast, so I am not going to get super duper duper into it, but I am going to say it again, because to me, this is like one of the most powerful tools we have as a thinking animal, and it's journaling. For me, writing and journaling is like the thing that I can see has sharpened my thinking ability, sharpened my ability to communicate, improved my vocabulary, and it's been so foundational in me getting to know myself. I also really love going back in time and looking at like who I was and what I thought and what I felt and how I grew. All of that information is so priceless to me. And I'm glad that I was gifted a diary at a young age, even though I thought it was a whack gift at the time and I was mad about it. It ended up being something that I, like, to this day, a resource and a tool to this day that I use and that I will always use. So here are some of the ways that I journal. And you're welcome to find your own ways, but I want to just give you some inspiration and what that actually looks like. And if you want more information on journaling, I do have a whole podcast episode about it with more details, so check that out. But the ways that I currently journal, one of them is just freestyle. Like, I sit at my computer, depending on what I'm feeling. Most of the time I do this when I'm confused about my feelings. I have so many feelings that I don't know what they are. So I sit at my computer and I just type. I don't format anything perfectly. I have no intentions. I don't correct my spelling. Well, sometimes I just can't take it and I do correct my spelling. But the point is, I just let my thoughts and my feelings fall. I just let them fall. I don't know what that's called, but that's one of the main ways that I have been journaling for years and years and years. In more recent years, additional practice I adopted is writing my dreams down as soon as I wake up. And I know a lot of people are going to think this is weird, and I don't understand that. I think dreams are so interesting, and it's like you have access to like this amazing amount of information that like you can look at and use, and we all have it. And anyway, let me not get on another tangent. I write down my dreams as soon as I wake up. And in doing this, sometimes I get ideas. Sometimes I solve problems. I have come up with choreography. I have come up with songs. Sometimes I get deeper insight into my emotions by examining my dreams. I had a dream earlier this year that I had gotten a job that I used to have, and I was so happy, and I woke up with this sense of like relief because I didn't realize it was a dream. And then when I realized it was a dream, I was so sad that that actually didn't happen. And that was like a signal to me, like, okay, it's time to get your career together. Like, you can't move in this direction anymore. It's time to make a choice. And so I just think that dreams are an incredible source of insight and information to yourself. So I do not forsake that. I write my dreams down as soon as I wake up in the morning. A lot of people say that they don't remember their dreams as much. You can improve your dream recall by writing them. So I have been in a practice of writing my dreams now for a while. And so almost always I dream, almost always I remember my dreams, and I try to write that down as soon as I wake up before I lose it. And something that I actually also started doing in the form of journaling is video journaling. And I have to say, I feel like it is the equivalent of like a month of therapy to sit down and talk and express my thoughts and my feelings. There's something about seeing my own face and my own eyes as I express myself that is incredibly healing. So if writing isn't your thing, maybe that is. The things that I've shared have been improving your sleep, movement, getting more movement in your life, incorporating more play in your life, and utilizing journaling as a tool to get to know yourself and your thoughts and feelings. And just know that you have options. Even if you can't get professional help, you're not ready to get professional help, you don't want to get professional help, but you do still want to grow. You do want to have some resources to help you cope and manage life. You can. There are tools in your tool belt, things that you have access to help you cope and manage whatever you're going through, friend. So now we'll get into our last segment, which is Hi, Friend. And the question that I got this week is related to therapy. It says, Hi, friend. I've tried therapy, but after a while, I felt like I learned everything I needed to, and it was just diminishing returns to keep going. Do you think we ever graduate from therapy? Oh, this is a good question. So here's what I have to say. If you can maintain a relationship with a good therapist, I think it's worth doing so. The point of therapy is to, you know, help you to develop the tools to be able to manage your life and to maintain your mental health. And so I think a good sign that you've made progress and that you're doing well in therapy is that you're able to do some of those things on your own. You're able to do some of your own emotional, you know, processing, and you are able to tap into the coping skills that you may have developed in therapy in your life when you're not in session. You obviously can't go to your therapist with everything in your life, and they're not there to handhold you for every moment. They should really be there to help you have tools in your tool belt. So I think it makes sense that at some point, maybe your consistency or your frequency, I should say, would change. Like maybe if you were, when you started therapy and you were in crisis, maybe you were weekly or biweekly, and then as you got a little bit better, it became monthly, and then as you got even better, it became quarterly. I think that that would be like an ideal way to approach it, because there is a friend of mine used this expression about having a personality retainer. I think that there is, you know, maintenance required to keep your mental health at a place where you feel good. And life fluctuates. So once you get to a place where you feel good, life is going to happen and it's going to challenge, you know, your growth and your mental health, and you might need a retainer. So I would say if you've grown, then maybe it's time to look at your frequency of therapy. But if you can keep a relationship with a therapist, like if that's something that you have the access and resources to do, I would recommend it. And, you know, I think if you're considering stopping therapy or lessening your frequency of therapy, a good thing to ask yourself is like, how are you managing challenges? Are you, as challenges come up in your life, are you comfortable with the way that you're managing them, or do you feel overwhelmed? Do you feel like you need someone to talk to and you don't have necessarily that outlet in your social circle? I definitely don't agree that continuing therapy is diminishing returns. There's always, you know, you're always going to be growing and changing as a human being and as your life changes. And there's going to be different stages where you might have been totally prepared for life up until you got to this next stage, and now you're not prepared and now you need support. So do I think you graduate from therapy? No, I don't think you graduate from therapy. Do I think that you can start to need therapy less or need to rely on your therapist less? I would say yes, and I think that that's a good sign. I personally don't plan on stopping therapy as long as I am able to do so. I plan on continuing to have that relationship, and I think it's worth keeping. So that's my thought. Now, if you have a question that you want to hear me talk about and discuss in detail on an episode, then submit your questions on stressinthecitypodcast.com/contact, and I will do my best to incorporate it in an episode where it makes sense. I really enjoy doing that, so please submit your questions. That's very, very exciting and fun for me. So that's it for today's episode. If you're enjoying the Stress in the City podcast, please leave me a review. You can also follow me on Instagram at Stress in the City Pod. I want to say stressinthecitypod.com, but it's not .com. It's just Stress in the City Pod on Instagram. The website is Stress in the City Podcast. And again, I thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next time, friends.